Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League. Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham flick, and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. We have a very economic panel tonight, very lean but mean. I'm going to get us started. I'm your host, Greg, and I am joined, as always, by my sidekick, Ben Daniels. Ben, how does it feel to be here tonight?
Oh, it feels amazing. Thank you so much for having me back.
Well, you know, it's we don't have you on all the time, so we want to get you on some of the time. Next up, we have the veteran of the podcast. I'll come up with another joke for him one of these days, but today's not that day. It's Brian Ashlock. Brian, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great. I appreciate when I'm the veteran and not like the resident Coke dealer. So, you know, it's always nice to have the kind introduction. I appreciate that.
We want to keep the cops off our ass, Brian. So, like, how about you stop being such a snitch?
That's all right. We just gotta keep the heat. You know, lay low until the heat's off. It's fine.
We do not have our evil numbers wizard with us tonight. Presumably, he is somewhere putting squares on maps. And we want to send a special Wheeler Dealer shout out to our favorite internet terrorist, Reno Wallabout, and congratulate him on the sex. So let's move on from there and start talking about Tottenham's impressive 3-1 win over Fulham. Ben, I'll tee you up for this. Let's start with some general thoughts on the game before we get into the particulars. Was this an impressive win for Spurs?
Yeah, we looked really good. You know, I think there's some questions about quite how good Fulham is. You know, they haven't quite lived up to the expectations when they got promoted as being this, you know, super exciting, you know, Premier League ready side. But they definitely gave a good accounting of themselves, and you know, I think they responded to us well, and then Pochettino in turn you know, had to figure out a way around them, and he did, and we looked good doing it.
Brian, if you look at this match, I think it's sort of, I don't know, you could split it into thirds. Spurs had an amazingly dominant first half. Fulham, I don't, dominated is probably too strong a word for their next 20 minutes of the second half, but they certainly sort of reasserted themselves in the game when they equalized, and then Spurs seemed to just kick it back into another gear for the rest of the match after Pochettino made a couple key substitutions. Do you think World Cup fatigue is still a factor on this team? Do you think it is just, you know, this is just a product of an early season match, especially against a newly promoted team with a lot of new moving parts that might be a little hard to predict? I mean, what do you sort of account? Is this just business as usual? I mean, what's your read of this match?
I mean, I think our major problem is that we've had a lot of new signings to integrate. And
as always.
No, but seriously, I think that it is still a little World Cup fatigue. A lot of the guys that played a lot of minutes at the World Cup are still playing a lot of minutes for Spurs, and you know, I don't know. There's issues with rust, and you know, these guys still probably not being having had a preseason, having not had time to get ready. I think that all affects everything. I think it's going to take until, you know, September for us to really see the team kind of clicking in the way that we expect them to. But, you know, that being said, we won. So it's fine. I mean, if you're going to go out there and kind of knock the rust off against some lower quality opposition in the first 2 weeks, these were two pretty okay ways of doing that.
Well, let's. We have a tendency on this podcast to be a little negative sometimes, so I want to look at this from the other side, because I think one of the things that, you know, I think people would have seen them as happy clappers, for instance, on Twitter when The Spurs didn't sign anyone. One of the advantages that the Spurs squad has this year is basically it's the same team from last year, so they should all know each other inside and out. They don't have to learn a new way to play, unless with the exception of a couple of youth players and Lucas Moura. I mean, this is basically the Spurs squad we had last year plus Lucas Moura, and I think while it's been a little uneven, I think you can look at the first half of both matches and be extremely impressed by them. If this is sort of Tottenham not having gotten out of first gear, Ben, do you think, I mean, could this be a better Spurs team than last year, just given the fact of how familiar they are and Lucas Moura is part of the mix and, you know, assuming injuries go our way, do you think it's we could potentially be better than we were last year? Because I've been very impressed with segments of our performances this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys are both underselling this win. I thought it was a very good win. You know, I mean, we created a lot of chances. We scored some very good goals. You know, we struggled for a bit because, you know, in this 3-5-2 we were playing, we had our midfield of Dyer, Eriksen, and Dele Alli, and Eriksen and Alli were spending a lot of time further forward as we were knocking on the door. And as Brian mentioned last week, you know, Fulham have a very strong midfield. They had, you know, Jean-Michel Seri, who had a very good game against us. You know, Tom Kearney, who was great in the championship. And unlike their first game, they added their defensive midfielder that they signed, Anguissa. And, you know, they kind of grew into the game. Again, these are guys who haven't really played together, and it showed a little bit. But they grew into the game and, you know, started bullying us in midfield and just let Sessegnon kind of run riot down the wings. And Pochettino responded to that really, really well and brought on Dembele for Davinson Sanchez, gave us that extra body in midfield. And, you know, 30 minutes of Moussa Dembele up to his old tricks, looking as good as ever, you know, is great. And it's great to see that, you know, he might be able to give that to us this season, because he was able to wrest control back to Spurs. And once he came on, I mean, it never looked in doubt that we were going to see at home. So I thought, I mean, again, I thought it was a very good performance. As to your second question about how good can we be this season? I mean, you know, again, you know, we have a very young team, and, you know, these guys are getting a year older and they're getting a year better. You know, the key players on our team haven't hit like the decline in their aging curves. You know, Harry Kane is still like 25 years old. He shouldn't even be peaking for another year or two. You know, which is insane. So, you know, you definitely expect improvement, individually, which will help. I think Dele Alli is looking like he has made a huge leap and is ready to be a superstar this season. And Lucas Moura has fit in seamlessly. And so, you know, we joke that he's like a new signing, but he really is a new signing. And that's a huge addition. So, yeah, I mean, I think we could definitely be better this season.
And one of the things that Ben kind of touched on there is Kane was actually good in this game. I think there are a lot of people, you know, who were looking at Kane and were thinking like, okay, well, he hasn't really been the same since that ankle injury. He played a different role at the World Cup. He wasn't getting as many shots as he was before the ankle injury. Then he came back and he played the first Newcastle game, and he was still kind of dropping deep, not getting as many shots. And then in this game against Fulham, he actually looked kind of like old Harry Kane. He was popping up on the end of chances in the box. I think he had four, maybe five shots in the game. He scored a goal in August, which was, you know, the end of a big curse that had been hanging over him, I guess. And, you know, he just generally looked a lot more like his old self. And that's a good sign for the team. I mean, if he's going to not be the Kane that was, you know, existed from March to the end of July, we're a lot better off.
Well, I think another, I mean, you look at Kane's shots, you look at the, you know, way he was playing in this game, I think it's impossible not to be encouraged by it. But I guess one of the low key things that really impressed me about it is I felt like he became better as the game went on. So for a guy who, you know, I know we were all worried about fatigue with him, I was very encouraged that, you know, this guy seemed to be asserting himself even more as the game went on. And I'm sure, you know, I mean, Fulham was clearly falling apart and that game was getting beyond them. But I was just really heartened to see Kane playing the way he was in sort of the last 20 minutes of the match, you know, as good as the first 70 were. I was very impressed with Kane's performance all around. It's probably not like, you know, it's not the best we've seen out of him, but for a guy who, you know, we all thought was dead for about like 7 months now, it's encouraging to see that kind of stuff coming out of him. I think it is worth looking at a couple players for Spurs. We just talked about Kane, so I think we've done that. Ben, you touched on Lucas Moura. Would you like to expand on that at all? I think it, particularly in the first half, he was everywhere, creating chances, creating shots, just all over the place. His pressing in particular, I thought, was incredibly impressive. He was just, this is a guy who looks like he really took the summer to understand how to play at Spurs. And I think what's really encouraging about it is I don't think he's entirely there yet. And I think he's still got a little bit of ways to go, which if what we're going to keep getting what we saw out of him this week and he can get better, I think that's incredibly encouraging.
Yeah, well, it's funny you should mention creating chances, because so far this season he has 0.00 expected assists. He has not, I mean, he's put in balls that no one has gotten on the end of, and like he's not creating, but so far he has not created a shot for another teammate. And part of this is down to like the kind of weird way we're using him, which I can't remember how much I talked about last week, but I mean, we played Lucas Moura basically as a second forward, again, and you know, instead of having him out wide dribbling guys like you think he would be doing, he is in the box, you know, making runs off the defenders or, you know, kind of dribbling in tight central spaces.
But this kind of fits something that Pochettino has been futzing around with for a while. I mean, you look at what he was trying to do with Jansen, shit, what would that have been, 2 years ago? Some of what he tried to do with Llorente. I mean, I feel like Poch has been second striker curious. Yeah, Dele Alli's
done that, and Son has done that. You know, it's not atypical for Pochettino. It's just a little surprising for a guy like Lucas Moura, who, you know, again, is such a strong dribbler that it's a surprising use of him.
But he's such a fast player. I mean,
right. Like he's a guy you kind of expect to be running in open spaces, not playing tight in the box. But he's done really, really well at this role that he's been asked to play. You know, he scored a phenomenal goal to open the scoring. He's getting on the end of chances. He had another chance where, you know, he was in one with the keeper and just a heavy touch took it too far away from him and let Fabry grab the ball. But, he looks very dangerous. And, you know, he opens up space for Harry Kane, which is helpful, especially, you know, if he does have fitness concerns, this is a good way to kind of give him a little more room to operate. I continue to be very, very pleased with Lucas Moura.
And the goal was even more impressive because he's so right-footed, and he struck that so nicely with his left.
Oh, it was such a good goal. And it was, I feel like he could have scored two or three others in this match. I mean, he had that header that went wide, and I believe he had a sort of a dead it straight into the keeper shot. But, I mean,
that was definitely the hardest chance that he had.
This is, I think we've got really someone on our hands here. It's a lot, I guess you sort of alluded to this, he's using him a little bit like he's used Son before, but I think he's got even more versatility because I think he's even more of a speedster than Son is. So if we want to deploy him out wide, if we want to get him somewhere where he's in some space running into dudes, I think that makes him incredibly dangerous. And whether I think he's in tight spaces or running on the wings, one thing that sort of struck me about Lucas in the limited time I've had to watch him is how good he is at sort of keeping the ball under challenge or at least drawing a free kick. And, you know, so in some ways it makes sense that he would sort of deploy him in those tight spaces, given that he is good at that.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, just like the difference between him and Son is I would say Lucas is much better on the ball, whereas Son is much better off the ball and making those runs. And so, you know, you want a guy who's going to make those runs. But he looks like he's doing a good job of it. So, I'm happy.
It's really weird watching a guy that fast play for Spurs. I don't think we've had, outside of our fullbacks, we really haven't had a lot of players like that for a while now.
Yeah. Like, since Lennon.
Yeah.
You know, assuming Nkudu and G, like, don't count because they don't.
I mean, Gareth Bale was kind of fast.
Yeah, but Lennon was here longer than Bale. So, in your face.
I'll take your word for it.
I think the final guy who I think is worthy of a little bit of individual discussion from this match is our, you know, second best French international, Kieran Trippier. Trippier was, I don't know, it's like, that was a really good free kick. And generally, I'm not one to let one moment sort of outweigh a lot of poor play. But that was a really, really good free kick. And for me, that overcame a lot of, you know, like a big part of what Trippier is useful for Tottenham is his ability to, when he's able to really get forward against a bad team or a team that's not attacking us as much. Like, you know, that's why he always kills Watford or Burnley when we play them. You know, he's able to sort of, you know, park his ass up the field, and he doesn't really have to worry quite as much about getting back as he does against, you know, a City or a United. And he really did, I mean, it really felt like Fulham was inviting us to pass him the ball, especially in the first half. And he was just pumping aimless cross after aimless cross. And it was really, I found it even more irritating because it's not like he was under pressure. Like, I mean, he had time to pick some passes out. And, you know, it wasn't entirely bad. He had some decent interplay around the box occasionally.
It was very bad.
It was not good. Let's at least settle on that. But that free was excellent. I mean, that free kick was good enough for me to wonder if we should just, like, not let Eriksen do it anymore. It was extremely good.
I'm happy to put him on set pieces, but he had a very bad game. And that free kick was great, but you got to wonder, you know, our attack in the first half, like you said, it was a lot of buildup on the left-hand side. We'd pass it around, and then Fulham would get sucked over to that side. Trippier would make a run down the wing. We'd switch it to him in acres of space, and he would cross it to nobody. And, you know, if you just imagine how our attack functioned, you know, as many chances that we did create otherwise, if, you know, 80% of our attack wasn't useless balls to nobody, you know, you don't need a Trippier free kick to bail you out. You know, you're home free by halftime.
Well, and it's like, it's not like Trippier is incapable of good crosses. I mean, that is one of the better things he does. And what frustrated me so much was just he had time. You know, it wasn't like guys were closing him down and shit, I better get rid of it. He had time to pick people out. He had time to, like, maybe dribble in the box a little or make some more lateral passes. But it just was, you know, he just seemed to be, like, you know, spamming crosses. And it was just, I don't know what the hell he was doing. Like, maybe he was told to do that. I don't know. I mean, even if he was told to do that, I can't imagine he couldn't have picked out some better.
I mean, it's kind of his default setting, you know? I mean, he had 14 crosses during the game and completed 4 of them. And I don't recall any of those 4 being, like, dangerous chances or, you know, real looks. It was just, I mean, that's a lot of turnovers. There's a lot of possessions that we just surrendered back to Fulham, you know, pretty needlessly.
Yeah, it's not like we were playing from behind, or it's not like we were playing Fernando Llorente, where, okay, maybe it makes sense to, you know, kick it in, hope and pray, but... Man, yeah. I think he's got to do better. At the same time, I'm all for putting him on set pieces now.
I will say, just to keep being mean to our fullbacks.
Sure.
You know, you talk about how he thrives in a situation where no one's attacking him and he's allowed to get forward with that kind of freedom. The guy who normally would be attacking that space on Fulham is Ryan Sessegnon, who plays on the left almost exclusively. In this match, he didn't. He played on the right for most of the match because...
Why was that?
Because a certain terrible fullback plays on the left, and he was able to eat his lunch all day. So, just had to get that dig in because it wouldn't be Wheeler Dealer Radio without me being mean to Ben Davis.
It's true. I think, I mean, we could talk about Sessegnon a little bit because he's been linked to Spurs for so long. I think it's certainly fair to say that he's good. I don't expect Ben Davies to have an easy day at the office when he plays Sessegnon, but Jesus Christ, this is his second Premier League game. You got to do better than that, Ben. Like, you're a full international. You've been at Tottenham for years now. You started basically every goddamn game last year. You know, you had all summer off. And you're getting skinned alive out there. It's just, oof. We said it last year. It's the biggest thing holding the squad back from really competing for titles, I think, is our fullback play at this point, which is crazy because we had the best fullbacks in the league like 2 years ago. So,
yeah, But I will say, you know, the back three definitely helps mitigate that damage a little bit.
It does.
You know, Toby and Vertonghen, you know, being able to cover in those wide areas is useful.
Well, let's talk about Toby. This is his first game back since his exile. I don't think he was a revelation or anything, but it sure was nice to have him back there. He was, you know, especially when he was pinging some of those trademark Toby Alderweireld deep passes from the back line.
Yeah, they were beautiful. It was nice to see.
Brian, what did you think of the back three in general, of how we deploy? I guess it's the first time this year out of the two games that we've really used it. But now that it seems like Pochettino is going to give Toby a bit of a run in the team, you know, what do you think of us with the back three again? It's been a while since we've done that.
I mean, it's fine. I think, it works well if that's how you're going to utilize Trippier. And, you know, like, I
Davies
like
too. If he's going to play, I mean,
I would, you know, I don't like the idea of having two not particularly mobile wingbacks.
They are both going to play, the back three protects both of them to some extent.
Sure, but I mean, I'd really like, you know, to have, you know, someone who could really bomb up and down that wing like Danny Rose if we're going to play a more stationary wingback on the other side. But, you know, it was fine. You know, Toby looked good on the ball. Defensively, it looks like we still have a couple issues with who needs to be marking whom and when. But it was fine. I thought it worked well. And then when we went to just the back four with Toby and Vertonghen, I thought that looked great. I would like to see a lot more of that. That would be what I want to see going forward is more just Toby and Jan playing center back together, and then we figure it out from there.
So
I mean, one of the limits to that is Dembele. You know?
I was just about to get into that. We haven't
quite figured out what a midfield looks like without him, and you know, if he's only a 30-minute closer, you know, I think that's fine. I'm happy to have him because he's great, but if he can't go 90 minutes, we still need to figure out.
I mean,
still going to operate.
I find it very hard to believe that he's gone from all of a sudden, you know, being, you know, 70, 80 minutes, sometimes 90, to now he can only do 30. Like, there's no way that is the curve that he's on. Like, if you told me, like, oh, he can only do a half hour or 70 minutes now, I would believe you. But, you know, short of him being like still actually injured or still not, you know, fit from coming back from the World Cup, there's no way that he shouldn't be able to do 60, 70 minutes.
I guess that's a thing we'll have to learn.
I mean, I think how much we use a back three versus how much we just use Vertonghen and Toby, amongst other things, is really going to depend on Winks and Wanyama's fitness. And Wanyama certainly seems like he's out for the foreseeable future, but Winks, it sounds like, is coming back into fitness, and who the hell knows? I mean, he had a cameo at the end of this match to give Harry a breather, but I don't know about you guys. I have I don't want to say no confidence, because that implies that I think he sucks or something, which I don't, but I just have no clue what we're going to get out of Harry Winks right now. He was so early in his development when he got hurt. You know, I don't know if he's going to have regressed, if he's, you know, progressed because he's been watching a lot of film. There's, like you said, Ben, there's a lot of question marks around this Tottenham midfield, but we do have a couple really good guys if we can use them as super subs, as we saw in this match when Pochettino brought in on Dembele for Sanchez at first, and then about 10 minutes later he brought on Lamella for Dier, and both of those guys look super up for it. Ben, what do you think about those substitutions? I know in the past you have had issues with how Pochettino makes his subs.
Yep, and this was one of the good ones. I mean, you know, we already talked about Dembele. Eric Lamella looked amazing. I mean, his run for Harry Kane's goal was just a thing of beauty. You know, it's maybe premature to talk about does he deserve a starting spot, but, you know, I think if we see this Lamella more often, I think it's going to be a question of, you know, can we leave him out of the team?
Well, that was the trick.
I know,
within
again,
last
it's premature,
year.
But...
Yeah, that was the trick with him last year, is he had these great sub appearances and he would come in as a starter and kind of be anonymous. I'd like to think that his fitness is such right now. Now he's had a full preseason and a year to recover from his surgery, that we might see that. I mean, is it premature to say that he should be a starter? Maybe. Is it premature to say Eric Lamela is better than Pele? I don't know. Possibly. Depends. You know, it depends how unreasonable you're feeling like being. But I mean, he was all over the place. I mean, he didn't kill anyone with his elbows in this match. But, you know, it's his first match of the year. We ought to be patient.
And honestly, like, the biggest thing is just, like, boy, how nice is it to have a bench full of useful subs,
mm-hmm.
you know, when we need something that we can bring on guys like Dembele and Lamela, you know, and if Harry Winks gets healthy, a guy like Harry Winks, like, that's huge. I mean, you know, we don't have to bring on Fernando Llorente and Musa Sissoko anymore and, like, hope that it'll make things actively worse. We actually have game changers.
Are you suggesting we're not going to sub on Sissoko?
Oh, we're definitely going to sub on Sissoko.
Okay, I just want to make sure. Like, he's going to be on the bench.
He's not our only option.
And yet he's still going to have, like, I don't know, 20 sub appearances at least.
Yeah.
I really hope Sissoko's Spurs career ends with, like, he's this garbage for the entire time, and then he, like, inexplicably scores an incredibly crucial goal on, you know, some cup run or some really memorable game. And we're all just, like, mystified by it in years past. And we have, like, children and younger fans who ask us why the hell we hated Musa Sissoko so much. Because did you see that, like, 50-yard screamer he scored against Arsenal to win the FA Cup? And we just sort of mumble miserably into our beer as they look at us very confused. But that's probably not going to happen, so.
No, I like this fan fiction you're writing.
I try. I try. So, I think the other thing about this game that is sort of worth discussing is I guess Sarri, who's the other guy that Fulham had, in addition to Sessegnon, that we have been linked with in the past. Everyone was surprised that we got. I mean, Fulham had a really impressive summer, and, you know, that's 2 weeks in a row they've kind of gotten their ass whipped. You think Fulham are going to stay up this year, Ben?
Yeah, I think they're definitely going to stay up. You know, they still don't have center backs or their first choice center backs back. Their goalkeeper is not good, and they signed a new goalkeeper, and he hasn't come into the team yet. This is, you know, their first game with their defensive midfielder. You know, it's just they're going to have some kinks to work out, but I think they'll be fine. They have enough talent that I think they should be fine. There's some very bad teams in the Premier League this year.
I mean, the thing about it is though, like, you know, starting the season off and getting points is so crucial because it makes,
especially for teams in the position Fulham is in.
Yeah, because, you know, then it makes the times where the fixtures start to stack up and where, you know, when suspensions start to come in or tired legs or injuries happen, like if you have a cushion at the end of the at the beginning of the season, it makes all that stuff in the middle and the end of the season a lot easier to deal with. And, you know, Fulham are in this position where they have no points after the first two games. Wolves are in the position where they have 1 point. Cardiff have one. I don't think Burnley have any points yet. Like, Arsenal don't have any points yet. You know, like, you've got a number of clubs.
Yeah, it's really going to hurt Arsenal in their relegation fight down the stretch.
Yeah, it really will.
Well, Big Sam's already warned them of the problems of their approach. So,
but it's just like, you know, we always talk about how, like, Spurs waste opportunities by dropping points in August and September. And, you know, knock on wood, so far we haven't done that. But, you know, it's especially crucial for teams like Fulham. And like Ben said, you know, yeah, they have a lot of talent. And, yeah, they'll probably get it sorted out. But, you know, for the next month or two, they need to start actually putting it together and winning some games. Because at a certain point, you know, they're going to be way behind the eight ball.
Yeah, but I think, you know, one of the things we need to give Fulham a little credit for is, you know, their two games came against Spurs, who are the best team in the league, and Crystal Palace, who I think are going to be the best of the non-top six sides this season. You know, or at least one of the better, you know, mid-table teams. So I guess it's good for Fulham that they're, you know, maybe getting some of their jitters out of the way against teams that they maybe would be lucky to take points from in the first place. But, you know, they haven't played the easiest schedule to open things up.
So
I think it'll be okay.
Moving from, you know, a team that we think is going to finish in the top 10 or, you know, comfortably out of relegation zone to a team that we think, you know, is definitely due for relegation. Tottenham play Jose Mourinho's Manchester United this coming week. How are things going at Manchester United these days, Ben?
Swimmingly, I think. I mean, they put up a really good fight against a strong Brighton side. You know, they scored two goals, I think.
Almost drew. They almost drew.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to steal a draw at home, was it at home? I don't know.
It was in Brighton.
On the road against a team as good as Brighton is, you know, is encouraging. Yeah, no, they're kind of a mess right now, and Jose Mourinho seems to be melting down at every turn. You know, he is in his fabled third season, where historically the wheels come off of Jose Mourinho teams. You know, and it seems like he's picked a fight with everybody. Pogba wants to go to Barcelona. Anthony Martial had the nerve to have a child. You know, he's fighting with Ed Woodward over, you know, control of transfers. And, you know, nothing is going happily for Manchester United. And despite
Zidane all... Zidane might be interested in the job.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's just glorious. It's so good.
So let's because I think we'll make fun of Jose in a minute. But Brian, what's like wrong with United right now? Aside from the fact their manager is like a psychopathic tyrant who's run out of goodwill. I mean, like on the pitch, like if you're looking diagnosing why is Manchester United losing games other than the fact that they are run by a psychopath?
Like their players aren't good. I mean, look, Jose Mourinho spent like the back half of last season and all summer complaining about how his defenders weren't good. And Jose Mourinho plays in a low block system and relies on his central defenders and his defensive midfielders to break up play and stop the other team from getting chances. And he has taken Eric Bailly, who is a good defender, and turned him into a shitty one. And then he's partnering Bailly with Lindelof, and I don't know who else is healthy. Phil Jones, I guess, maybe, you know. And then he's got fullbacks that are a combined 68 years old. Where you're playing,
you know, 700 pounds, just
yeah. So you know, it's like his back line isn't good, and then he still hasn't figured out how to let Pogba off the leash. You know, they've been playing Pereira, they're signing from Porto, who was I think at Porto a fullback. They've been playing him as a defensive midfielder, and
he was like an attacking midfielder.
Yeah, and they've been playing him as like the deepest lying of the three in a midfield, with Pogba and Fred. And weirdly, that's not been the worst thing about United. Like, he's actually done okay, but then he got yanked at halftime of the Brighton fixture. And Fred's been bad. Pogba has been, you know, just regular, like not World Cup Pogba, but just like normal United Pogba. And yeah, they're just not that good. I mean, you know, Mourinho doesn't know what he's doing with the squad that he has, and the first team players, especially the first team players in defense, just aren't getting it done anymore. And you combine that with the fact that all of a sudden David De Gea looks kind of like he's mortal, and where he's conceding shots or conceding goals where you would expect him to, and he's making, you know, some errors that you wouldn't expect him to. And United are kind of coming back to earth.
Ben, what's more satisfying, watching, you know, Jose Mourinho piss away the last high profile job of his career, or watching David De Gea come back to sort of planet Earth?
Honestly, the most enjoyable part of it is Alexis Sanchez, who had an atrocious first game. You know, he sulked his way out of Arsenal and moved to United, where he didn't have a very good half season. He was awful in the first game, and then he wasn't even in the squad this past week. Jose started Anthony Martial, who we know he fucking hates, I don't know if that was just like just to send a message to Sanchez to like get his shit together, or like what crazy head games are happening there. But I would love if Alexis Sanchez turned to shit. I mean, it would kind of validate Arsenal for getting rid of him, but I just hate that guy so much. And I would be very happy to see him wither away.
You just had to listen to so much about Alexis over the past few years in that house of yours that.
So much.
I mean, the thing is like, you know, like we dog on Spurs for not signing anybody this summer, but like arguably United signing only Fred and Pereira is.
Well, they had Pereira. He was just on loan.
No, then I'm thinking of someone else. They signed another fullback.
Oh, yeah. Diego Dolo or whatever his name is.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I'm thinking of. So them just doing that as their business is a lot worse than Spurs not signing anybody, because United have money, and like United could just do basically the Liverpool thing where they just go, all right, how much does he cost, and then pay that amount of money.
Not just that, I mean that is also true, but like you look at Spurs and like you want to talk about Spurs transfer business, and unless like Toby Alderweireld was able to force his way out, which he wasn't, you know, Spurs needed to do things to like shore up the squad and really kick on, you know, but at the same time, there's no like disaster areas where if you're Spurs, you should be like, fuck, we need to really seriously address that, or we're in some
fullback
shit.
But.
Well, I mean, but my point is, we did what we did last year. Like, the fullback situation is not like this rapidly deteriorating problem. You look at United's defense last year, and you look at like, we cannot bet on De Gea to play like this again. Like, they had to make a move, and they didn't do shit. It's
I mean, United did finish second last year, so. I mean, I understand your
disaster area is relative, but my point is there are far more areas of urgent need if you're Manchester United than, you know, where it's like this is going to be a serious problem next year than I think if you look at like Spurs, especially when you consider that United have like virtually infinite money to spend. Like
and they use
non-oil
that infinite
state.
Money on Fred, who's been bad.
Who's been
like,
Fred?
Like, yeah, exactly. He looks like that guy your dad knows named Fred. Like, that's what he has looked like.
Yeah, and he was dirty as hell in this match, which I don't think he had a rep for, Ben. I'm not sure if you have heard.
I know nothing about Fred.
Yeah, okay. I mean, we all watch a ton of Shakhtar games.
I mean, you know, I thought we were all, you know, educated football fans here. You know, we don't call it soccer on this podcast.
I don't think Shakhtar plays in France, so Brian...
Yeah,
never seen them
way outside of my area of expertise.
But, man.
But look, you look at United, like, they're playing Juan Mata, like, nominally on the right. I have no idea how much left that guy has to give. He has not looked good in a while.
I mean, he looked ready for MLS, like, 3 years ago.
They're using Jesse Lingard as a super sub.
How do you feel about Jesse Lingard, Ben?
Fraud. but you know, it's like they have Sanchez, Martial, and Rashford, who he rotates sometimes only in that like left forward spot. Like he hasn't even seemed to like try. Like, okay, well, you know, if Rashford can run fast on the left side of the field, maybe he can run fast on the right side of the field. Like, it just hasn't even entered into his head that, like, you know, he has some attacking talent that he could deploy in different ways. It's just like he's such a stubborn asshole. And I think, you know, despite we've talked about like holes in the squad, like there are ways to fix it that he's just neglected.
And I mean, you know, look, you've got, at the end of the day, you've got Lukaku, you've got Pogba, you know, Ander Herrera still exists. Matic still exists. Like, but this is a team that, you know, should not be this bad, you know, and I don't know. It just looks like sometimes, you know, you don't want to devolve into cliches and talk about players not playing for the manager and everything, but it's just like sometimes they look a little disinterested. Like even against Leicester, when they won, they weren't impressive. Like there weren't stretches of that match where you're like, oh, okay, everybody's rounding into form. Like you can see it coming together. It was just they just beat Leicester, and you know, and they played the exact same way against Brighton, and Brighton made them pay for it. Like Glenn Murray popped up to like beat all the defenders at the near post, like 34-year-old, 245-pound Glenn Murray,
and he beat everybody to the near post and scored this like crazy flick. And I was just like, what's Harry Kane going to do to these guys?
God, we're going to lose so bad.
I was about to say,
so bad. We're going to lose so bad. It's going to be 5-0.
He's going to hit the woodwork like 3 times. That's what he's going to do to these guys. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, every Spurs fan has made this joke on Twitter this week. You know, it's just like, and there is something to be said for all the way that United's falling apart. We saw it in the FA Cup last year that Mourinho is still able to just Mourinho another team. I'm going to set up defensively. I've got enough attacking talent to sort of steal a goal, and you're not going to score shit unless you get incredibly lucky against us. And I don't know. My worry is I don't think they're going to sleepwalk their way through our game, or they're not going to take us lightly, especially between the fact that we're a top four team and the fact that, you know, they just got their fucking ass embarrassed on national, you know, television last week. And I don't know. I feel like they're going to Mourinho us and they're going to fall apart against like City down the line or something.
I mean, we should beat them, but I mean, when we say that
absolutely
like,
should
be United are so bad right now. It's like, we're talking about like, they're the sixth best team in the league. It's not like,
oh, if Spurs had played that way, if Spurs had played that way though, like, and they were going up against another top four team, we'd be talking about how they're going to lose by 5 next week. Like, now part of that's because we're Spurs fans, but
unquestionably. But yeah, I mean, United are still good. They still have like Pogba and Lukaku. Like, you know, David De Gea can have one of those games, and I'm sure he will. But you know, they look less than the sum of their parts right now. And
well, let us not forget. It is important for us to remember, because I've remembered this, and I need you all to suffer with me, how fucking stupid that game at Old Trafford was last year. I mean, that was an incredibly stupid game.
But we've also played well against United in the past. Like, Pochettino has done, you know, recently good jobs of tactically planning for United matches. I want to say
not in the FA Cup.
Not in the FA Cup, but I want to say it was early last season. No, it was last season we lost him on the opening day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then
Newcastle opening day last year.
Oh, so it was in the first month, I think.
Oh, so it would have been 2 years ago, maybe? Oh, because it was Kyle Walker scored an own goal, so that was a long time ago. So yeah, that was definitely 2 years ago. But there's been matches where Pochettino has effectively set up a game plan to kind of, you know, skip over the midfield against against Manchester United in order to kind of neutralize Pogba and at the time like Herrera. And, so Pochettino knows what to do to kind of work around some of the strengths of Manchester United. And I think, you know, we have the central defenders that can deal with Pogba. So I'm confident that we can create a game plan to counter the things that Manchester United and Jose Mourinho want to do. It's just a matter of whether we'll pull it off in the execution. And that FA Cup match is one where, you know, like, it was frustrating and it was just came down to the execution. I think the plans were good for both sides. It was just at the end of the day, United executed better and they got lucky.
So, in terms of tactics, is this a game you start Eric Lamella in? I mean, he likes throwing them bows. And
assuming he's fit enough to play it, I don't have a problem being nasty and combative against United.
But if you play Lamella, who do you play him at the expense of? Do you play him at the expense of Eriksen or Dele?
Well, I mean, it's a good time for the 4-1-4-1. You know, where you play him on the left, Lucas on the right, with Ali and Eriksen central ahead of Dyer, and you go to a back four. Or, you know, you could get crazy and play him as a left wing back instead of Ben Davis.
That's not going to happen. So.
I think those are all fun and interesting things, and I mean, don't think any of them will happen.
Realistically, if he plays, he comes in for Lucas.
Yeah, and see, Lucas scored last match, and so I don't think that Pochettino, if you score, Pochettino generally doesn't bench you. And so I think we're probably going to see, I want to say we're going to see the 4-2-3-1 with Dembele starting and Davinson going to the bench and you know, kind of our typical Eriksen, Ali, and then Moura slotting in across the attacking band. I want to say that's probably what we'll see. I think that makes the most sense. It gives you enough flexibility so that you can switch it up if you need to, if you want to go to a back three, if you want to switch to a 4-1-4-1, you can do that with only one or two subs. Plus, I just think that's our best lineup still, just because we didn't really figure out the midfield. I think the 4-2-3-1, with Dyer being our only kind of holding midfielder that we have available, I think it's the best solution for us.
My big concern with that is, as Joel is fond of reminding us in Slack, Paul Pogba tends to chew up Moussa Dembele. Dembele does not handle him very well.
That is true. But, I mean, are you confident of a 4-1-4-1 midfield dealing with Pogba any better?
I mean, maybe just because you have an extra body in those zones, or, you know, a back three, you have Sanchez, so you can kind of let Pogba free in midfield a little bit, but, you know, you have more protection at the back. You know, you just, rather than try to find someone who matches up better against Pogba, you kind of set up around him to neutralize him in other ways. You know, I don't know. I mean, again, I think, you know, there's a very strong case that Dembele is our best midfielder, and if he can go, you know, you kind of got to go with him. But, you know, his fitness is an issue, and his record against Pogba makes me nervous.
So before we move on from this game, there's another Mourinho thing I want to talk about. I think, as Ben has said, the three-year Mourinho rule is canon. Mourinho is definitely going to not be at United next year because he's going to burn all the bridges related to that, to keeping that job. I don't know about you guys. I think of Premier League fans who came of age at a certain time, I'm certainly one of them. Mourinho was sort of like the guy in world football. Like, he was sort of like the celebrity, you know, premier coach. He was like the best coach in the world. There was a period of time at which that was true. I think Pep has supplanted him for years, but Mourinho's done, right? I mean, he's never going to get a job this prestigious again, is he?
I mean, who is going to hire him now?
I can't see any club that isn't thirsty for recognition. Like, I can see PSG hiring him because
they want... even PSG don't want
anything. I think PSG is thirsty enough for that sort of, like, the legitimacy they feel like he would lend them, that I could see them doing it.
The thing about PSG is they won a Champions League, and Jose has won Champions Leagues. You know, his boring whatever, like, I don't think it's going to undermine them in the domestic league. They seem pretty comfortable there. But he might bullshit his way to a Champions League victory, which is, you know, the thing that will put PSG on the map.
I just don't think that's how PSG, that, you know, from how they're structured to the football they want to play to all the things that the club, like, quote unquote, believes in. I think
what that club believes in is being taken seriously. And I think at some point, if they keep not winning Champions Leagues, they're going to, you know, they'll think Mourinho will get them taken seriously.
I don't know. I feel like they are much more happy with a Tuchel, with, you know, or bringing back an Ancelotti, or, you know, you
but know, I think Mourinho's Pochettino. I think Mourinho. I mean, Pochettino probably threads that needle, but, you know, I think they'll be happy with Tuchel until he doesn't win a Champions League for 2 years, and I think Mourinho's sort of like the same sort of move as Ancelotti, as bringing in Ancelotti just on steroids. And that's why I think he'll go there, because I don't think any other serious European club will take him.
The thing is, like, I don't know that he will go there. I think it's like, it's literally the only option, right? Like, yes. No other big team you could even conceive of wanting a Jose Mourinho.
Somewhere in Russia, like if you're Zenit, do you want Jose Mourinho? Yes. Or if you're Shakhtar or something like that, would you might take Jose just to be like, oh, look, we have Jose Mourinho.
Yes, I think that absolutely that's
the level of club we're talking about now. Is it's not, you know, he's obviously not going to Barcelona. He's not going back to Real or Chelsea or anywhere else in England. You know, there's just like, there's a lot of clubs that you can just draw a big X through and be like, nah, it's not going to happen.
No one in Germany wants him. I don't know. Maybe someone in Italy would take it. Like AC Milan
AC Milan is definitely like the most traditionally prestigious club that I think would take him.
Right. And that would, again, be like a desperate grab at legitimacy.
Yeah, and I don't think Milan has the money to, like, buy. You know, I mean, I think that would be a very short marriage, but...
But I mean, without Googling, I don't know how old Jose Mourinho is. But it's weird to me that he's kind of entered this, like, after this United job, he's going to enter this like late stage management career.
He's going to do what Capello did, I think. I think he's going to be a national team manager, either for like a team like PSG that's sort of like thirsty for recognition, or Portugal. I think he'll take one of those jobs. Like,
no,
if you're a national team, like, do you want that? Like, I mean,
you don't think U.S. soccer wouldn't like burn their own house down to sign Mourinho? Because I think they would.
Oh yeah, USA soccer would. But if you were a good national team, why would you want him?
Because, like Ben said, he's got a certain type of tactic that isn't. We're not talking about fucking tiki-taka here. It's the kind of thing you could drill into a team, and he wins things. So, like, you know,
yeah, he's good at tournament football. The World Cup, especially, seems like a thing that Jose would still be good at.
Yeah, I just
have the opportunity to like alienate his entire squad when you don't see them that often.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe national team management is the way for him to go. But like, certainly, if he loses this United job, there aren't a lot of clubs in the world I think that would be interested in. Well, when I mean, you know, I don't know. We were talking about this before the show. I think he's going to be out of the job by October. I don't. If things keep going like this and things continue to be as fractured as they are behind the scenes, I don't see how Woodward and United keep him around any longer than they have to.
I mean, I think you're right. I think there's going to be a point at which, you know, it'll suck to lose the Spurs. But even if he puts a good run of form together, what happens when like City whips the shit out of him by like 6 goals? You know, it's
all right. I got a nightmare scenario.
Oh no! Don't do this, Ben.
So you know, Real Madrid hired a very mediocre coach in Julian Lopetegui. I don't know how to say his last name correctly.
That's close.
But yeah, he was, you know, Spain's national team was like the only good job he's really had, and you know,
he was Porto's manager.
Yeah, whatever. We've seen a lot of people who beat Porto's manager.
like Jose Mourinho.
Some closer than others. So, you know, they fire him and Real Madrid finally go all out to steal Pochettino. And then we're entering the summer and Jose Mourinho is available. I don't want him, but does Levy take a long, hard look?
No.
Yeah?
No. I think Levy would go for... I think all the signs are Levy would go for some like up and comer. Like I can't imagine he'd take Mourinho at this point. We just had a transfer window where we did not buy anyone. Do you think Levy thinks he could manage Jose Mourinho? Because I don't.
I mean, Jose wanted to sell to us. I call it a nightmare scenario.
The scenario that you've laid out, in that scenario, I'm trying to think of who else we would hire other than Pochettino, or you know, who else would be
Tuchel after PSG's canned him.
Yeah, I don't know that they're going to can him after a year.
I think he's there for at least a year or two, unless you know he fights with that board.
There will be nowhere else, no one else prestigious on the market. It'll be like, do we poach Brendan Rodgers from Celtic, or do we go with Jose Mourinho?
Oh God, I don't even. I guess I'd rather have Rodgers because at least it would be funny, like.
Ugh. Is Roger Schmidt working anywhere? I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm just trying.
You know,
to think.
I'd rather have
Schmidt. Marco Silva will have a really good season at Everton, and he'll be Pochettino too.
Who would you rather have? You have to make a choice.
Next year, that's all I'm saying.
You have a choice to make. Yeah. Madrid comes in for Pochettino, and you have a choice to make between Brendan Rodgers and Jose Mourinho. Who are you taking?
I bet Daniel Levy would hire Gareth Southgate.
Choose the form of your destructor.
Stay puff Marshall, man.
I'd rather have him than either of those coaches.
Jeez.
I think anyway. I'd rather have Southgate than them, and I don't think Southgate's a particularly good manager. Certainly, I'm skeptical of him at a club level.
He was all right for like one of his seasons at Middlesbrough.
Sort of.
I don't know. We could always hire Tony Pulis. That'd be fun.
That would be fun. Well, I like how we've won 2 games and look pretty good doing it, and we're now talking about our managerial search next season and how everything goes wrong. Exactly. Very on brand.
You know what? Exactly, it's about staying loyal to your brand. It's, you know, it's about never waver. Never changing.
Trust your instincts, guys.
Mourinho just leaves death and destruction in his wake, and this podcast is another example of that. Christ only knows what next week's going to be like.
We're just one more casualty on Joe.
We could hire Antonio Conte. He likes three at the back. We could do that.
I mean, like,
I would take Conte.
Yeah, like, I mean, we'd probably have to hire someone again in like 2 or 3 years. But sure, like, all right. I'd rather have him than Rodgers or Mourinho.
That'd probably work fine.
Ooh.
Anyway, but yeah. So anyway,
just the fact that we've had Pochettino now for like, what is this, fifth season? Oh. Like, I mean, it's just wild that like we're just like, yeah, we just have a manager and like it's fine year in, year out. We just have this manager. It's just so foreign.
Do you think there's ever going to be a point where, I mean, I don't know if he's ever going to become Wenger for us. I think we all like that to happen, except you, Ben. But
like, I'm going to become Sir Alex Ferguson, where he's actually a good manager and keeps winning things.
But I guess there's like a point, you know, where he's the best manager of his era and also like probably mildly crooked. No, but do you think there's ever a point with him where it's just, you're just going to, do you think we're just going to wake up 1 year and be like, oh yeah, Pochettino, he's not going anywhere until he sucks or he wants to leave? Like, I don't know. It feels like, I don't know when we're going to reach the point where I'm just not scared of losing him. Maybe at Spurs, I'm always going to be scared of losing him, but
I think it's a product of Spurs, like, because we're not, and probably not going to be in like the very near future. We're not like the European elite. We're not contending in the late stages of the Champions League. We're not winning league titles. We're not winning other trophies. I think as long as we are not in that conversation, that the fear of losing a good manager or a good player is always going to be there. Like, if we all of a sudden like ran off like an FA Cup and a couple of league titles and, you know, a finals appearance in the Champions League, like, then maybe we could be like, oh yeah, no, this is cool. And, you know, we're still going to move into this nice big stadium at some point in 2030. So, you know, I think that would be the point where you could relax, but I think that it's a sustained period of success away before, you know, I, and probably even you, can stop having those sorts of fears.
Yeah. And then once we win a title, we're like, oh, well, he's accomplished everything he can at Spurs, so obviously he's going to leave. It will never end. The fear will never go
away. No, the fear will never end. And like you said, Brian, part of that's because we're not part of the European elite. And there's only very few teams who can, you know, really fend off anybody's interest. Do you think Liverpool's ever going to have to worry about losing Klopp? Because, I mean, some of it, I guess, is because Madrid have had opportunities to hire Klopp and Barcelona have had opportunities to hire Klopp. And for one reason or another, it doesn't seem to have happened. I mean, obviously, they're all psychopaths engaged in hero worship up there. Not that we have a whole lot of room to talk. But I don't know. There doesn't seem to be the same level of, like, sort of, oh, Madrid has a job opening. What about Jurgen Klopp that you see around
Pochettino? I mean, I think that's just a product of, you know, the English media, you know. They treat Liverpool as if it's like this, like, venerable institution that no one would ever dream of leaving. You know, there's no questions about they need to win a trophy. They need this. They need that. You know, we finished ahead of them last year. We finished ahead of them most years. You know, and they never get those questions asked of them. And I don't think that actually means anything. Like, if Real Madrid wants a coach, Klopp's a guy they're going to look at because he's very good. And they're not going to give a shit, you know, that the English media is fawning all over, you know, Liverpool right now. Like, so, you know, I think the Liverpool fans may not feel that fear because they're fucking arrogant dipshits. But I mean, the concern is just as much there as it is for us.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting, glad Jose Mourinho has just really expanded the horizons of this podcast. I think we have one or two questions we'd like to hit before we leave here. The first one comes from noted internet famous Twitter personality Windy, from the Fighting Cock and other podcasts. He wants to know, I think this is actually a very interesting question, if you were an opposition manager, what would you cite as Spurs' weakness and try to take advantage of? I know I would say our one or both of our fullbacks, depending on who we're playing that day. Ben, we'll start with you. Who would you? What would, if you were targeting Spurs' big weakness? What would you target?
I mean, go to Brian. You know what I'm going to say.
Okay, Brian.
I mean, okay. So if I have to say a thing that's different from what we know Ben is going to say, I would say that if you can get under our skin early and kind of wind us up a little bit, you can take us out of our game. Especially players like Dele Alli, players like Moussa Dembele, players like Eric Dier. We've seen in the past that you can get under their skin, and if you get them agitated early in matches, they can and will make mistakes. And so, you know, while we have some calmer heads in the team, there are some guys who are susceptible to getting caught up in emotions and making some rash decisions. So, you know, I would be telling players to, of those guys that you know can be gotten at, to be, you know, in their face, to be going in hard on them, to be, you know, just to be a general dickhead to some of these other guys, and seeing if you can get them to correspond with more dickish behavior, and maybe get an advantage that way. And then I'm sure Ben is now going to tell us about how our fullbacks are garbage.
Yeah, I was, but, you know, Greg already said that. So I'll say something different also. You know, I think one of the big things that we struggle with is being pressed ourselves. You know, we do not have a lot of guys, especially in midfield, who are great passers under pressure. And we find when teams like Liverpool or even West Ham show up and press the shit out of us, that also throws us off our stride. And, you know, keeps us from playing the game we want to play, and gives them opportunities that we're tend to not be prepared to respond to. And it also, you know, it keeps us from, you know, building our own attacks and creating for ourselves. You know, obviously the fullbacks, you know, if you're just talking about in a one-off game with, you know, the worst team in the league, what do? You know, I dump it in the channels and chase, because our fullbacks are slow and bad at defending. You know, we also seem to be very bad defending against cutbacks from those areas. You know, balls in the air we tend to be okay at, notwithstanding the fact that we've conceded both of our goals this year from crosses. But we don't seem to track runners super great, and so cutbacks from the edge of the box tend to expose us. You know. But yeah, I think overloading our midfield and exploiting our fullbacks are where we struggle.
Okay, so let's take on another sort of equally in-depth question. Ken, who is at AstroBull67 on Twitter, wants to know, who would win in a pie-eating contest, Luke Shaw or Mito?
I mean, Luke Shaw, Mito has turned his whole life around. I don't know if you saw him before the Fulham game, but that man is svelte and in fighting shape.
Channeling his inner Berbatov, it looked like, with those sunglasses.
Yeah, I mean, he is, you know, I mean, saw pictures of him from a few years ago. Like, he was in very rough shape and was very large. And, you know, he was like, no, I'm not going to live like this. And so I wouldn't even want to tempt the man with a pie. Let him live.
Also, I think Luke Shaw has more time to eat pies than Mito does these days. So,
but Mito has so much more experience.
You're right. Like, you're right.
Like, you know,
Mito knows what to do when he sees a pie.
Yeah. Like, look, there is a certain something to be said for just knowing what to do in important situations. And I think Mito has that over Luke Shaw. And I don't think that should be discounted.
You don't think Luke Shaw could overcome that canny veteran?
I mean, Luke Shaw is still, you know, a raw prospect who's never quite lived up to his potential. You know, he could definitely struggle.
Yeah, we only wonder if he ate all the pies. We know what Mito can do. There's no question about if he could eat all the pies.
It's true. Oh. And has Luke Shaw ever been the leading scorer in the Bundesliga? I don't think so. I don't think Mito has either, actually.
Not yet.
So our next one from THFC Kazoo wants to know, if Spurs win, when Mourinho throws a player under the bus, which one would surprise you the most?
Scott McTominay.
That would be really surprising.
He loves Scott McTominay. I don't know. I think if you're asking for a real answer, I think it would be unusual for if he were to throw like De Gea under the bus.
I think Jose could find a way.
Man, Scott McTominay is like the human form of passive aggressiveness. Like he solely exists to like subtweet the rest of Jose's players about how shitty they're being that this fucking kid, you know, gets to play ahead of them. It's amazing.
He was named player of the year or something, or like some young player of the year at United last year. So dumb.
Well, they clearly didn't realize the subtweets were about them.
So our final question, which comes from Alex Wolinetz, he wants to know, since Man City got an Amazon Prime series, what kind of TV show should Spurs pitch?
This is Ben's area of expertise, so I'll let him go first.
Is it? I mean, you know, I think we've already shown that we're very excellent at creating these like shitty reality show competitions between our players. You know, whether that's, you know, a Mario Kart tournament or whatever, you know, our social media has very much developed a brand around our players competing at dumb shit. So I'd like to see, you know, like a Survivor style reality show.
Ooh, Road Rules.
Yeah, that's great. Cause then they have to pick a buddy and Son can't pick them or it'll be very sad.
Deli and Eric just running rampant over everybody. Deli and Eric.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they've got the Belgian boys.
Yeah, as you say, I don't know, Vertonghen and Dembele might be really good together.
See, I think Spurs have some issues with their stadium of reestablishing trust with their fans, so I think they don't need a corporate, slickly produced show. I think they need to go, you know, like a really underground, you know, real dirty YouTube series that feels gritty and raw and real. So I think they need to do some sort of, like, Faces of Death show about like various players on the squad injuring themselves trying to do Delhi's various celebrations. Today he's like mangling his fingers to like go over both eyes, so I think we need to see like Moussa Sissoko just trying to put his hand near his face like Delhi does and like poking out an eye because he's Moussa Sissoko. I think that's what this team needs. I think that's what we, you know, that's how we reestablish our connection with the fans. Faces of Death,
riveting content.
I think it is. I think it would be. I think it would really be a hit with the youths.
But like, how many episodes can we execute Mrs. Sissoko?
I mean, South Park's still on the air, Ben, so presumably a lot.
That's true.
And on that note, I think it's time to wrap everything up. Ben Daniels, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Mastodon or my...
Oh my god.
You can read all my good toots from Comrade You Spurs.
Oh my god.
Wait.
Toots? Yep.
Yeah, they're called toots.
They didn't even try.
They tried, and people boost your toots.
Great. Oh, my God.
Wow.
It's the happiest place on earth.
Wow. I'm never signing up for that.
So if you're not signing up for that, where can they find you, Brian?
You can find me on just regular old Twitter, at Brian_Ashlock. It's Brian with a Y. That'll probably help.
All right. And you can find me on regular old Twitter at skipjack0079. For Ben, for Brian, I am Greg. Thank you very much. And come on, you Spurs.
Toots.